Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for hanging around with us today on this beautiful Labor Day. 800-531-3815, toll-free coast-to-coast, 800-531-3815. I'm excited about Bert Folsom being back on the show, folks, and I'm just going to get him in here right now. And before I do, let me tell you what a little bit about him. He's a professor of history at Hilldale College in Hilldale, Michigan, but this guy is just an incredible resource for us in our brain trust and for our show. He's the author of a number of books, including Empire Builders, How Michigan Entrepreneurs Helped Make America Great, and The Myth of the Robber Barons, A New Look at the Rise of Big Business in America. He's our good friend, Bert Folsom. Welcome back to the show.
Jim, thanks. It's good to be back.
It's wonderful to have you back on the show. But folks, you've heard me talk about some of the anniversaries that we've had. We've already gone over 5 years. November this year will be our sixth year. We've had, 1,200 and almost 1,300 consecutive live shows. We've got people who've been with us now since almost the beginning. Beverly Williams has been with us. One of our Brain Trust members was one of the first guests I had that week. But Bert Folsom and I have a distinct anniversary today, Bert.
We do.
This is every Labor Day that I've done this show. This is my sixth one. Bert Folsom has been a guest on my show on Labor Day. And, Bert, it's just been a pleasure for me, and it's exciting to continue that trend.
It is. Everybody else may be resting, but we're laboring going at it, aren't we?
See, I think that's such an irony. Don't you think that on Labor Day everybody takes off?
Well, there is something. Maybe they should work 16-hour days, a double shift or something on Labor
well,
Day.
Well, see, no, here's – I've decided that – I just decided, because I thought about that in the previous segment when I introduced the hour – Burden, and I've decided that what they were talking about were the employers. See, that Labor Day is a day when employees get off.
Right.
But it's a day when employers have to go to work to pay for letting the employees be off that day.
Well, it's true. If we have a labor force of 70 million, more than that, you've got a lot of laborers, employers, that have to at least be thinking and conceiving of ways to create income to pay for the days off.
Absolutely. Bert, let's take some time and go back into history. According to my records, let's talk a little bit about Labor Day. According to my records, the first Labor Day was September the 5th, 1882, in New York City, celebrated by members of CLU, the Central Labor Union. Now, is that accurate?
I have that. True as well. At Central Labor Union, the Knights of Labor is part of that whole group. They were a major labor union back in the 1880s, and they were the ones who picked it up and had it celebrated regularly. They wanted to do it every day, but it was not a holiday in the national holiday in the 1880s.
It did not become one until more than 10 years later. But where did the unions come from? Did they come out of the guilds?
Yes, that's the same concept. It's exactly the same concept. We had one that preceded the Knights of Labor was the National Labor Union. And the whole idea, of course, is that you regulate the number of people that can come into your guild or your labor union and thereby have some way of controlling the price of your product through the number of people in your guild or union. This is with the Craft Union Principle, which became part of the American Federation of Labor.
Right. But now the guilds go back to at least England, maybe more than that, as I remember.
Yes, I mean, we can date that back to the Middle Ages. We had trade guilds that were restricting membership and thereby making sure that the price was high for the product of those in the union.
Well, and they made their apprentices serve in incredible terms under them before they could become a master, didn't they?
Yes, the apprentice concept is very much part of it, and someone who was a master might have quite a few apprentices under him making sales for ships or whatever, and those people would work often very long hours before they would officially qualify to be members of the guild.
some of them for years. I mean, they would literally be in a, wasn't that one of the reasons that Ben Franklin left home because he got tired of working for his brother for all those years?
It's kind of the same principle involved, right, except Franklin just struck out. As you say, he wanted to have, there were more opportunities in Philadelphia than Boston working
right
under his brother.
But then you get the labor unions, and the labor unions pushed for this day. They took a day off on that day, on the 5th of September, 1882, the CLU did, and as you say, the Knights of Labor, but it was an unpaid day off. Now, see, that was a precedent.
That's interesting, isn't it?
That precedent didn't last long, did it?
No, it didn't. That's interesting that it was an unpaid day. Yes, that's a good point.
Because it was their own day. It was not sanctioned. It was not an official day. But it wound up being a day, but only because it was in the interest. It wound up being a federal holiday, but only because it was in the interest of the politicians who'd kind of messed up with the Pullman situation, right?
Right. That was a compromise with the Pullman strike, and President Cleveland signed into law a bill making Labor Day a national holiday, and the Pullman strike was in Chicago was a violent strike, and we had federal troops that came in to deliver the mail because the mail wasn't being delivered, and much unrest. Cleveland was not, unfortunately, popular. He was in many ways a good president, but he did have a compromise measure there and signed Labor Day is a sort of a sop to labor.
Right, exactly, and that was rushed through in 6 days, by the way, folks. That was record legislation for a national holiday. Bert, if I thought we could get a national small business day done that quickly, I wouldn't want to create any kind of damage or bloodshed to happen. But you know, boy, wouldn't it be something if we could get them to rush that through in 6 days?
Well, that would be something, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it sure would. Okay, so then labor it became official in 1892, I think it was.
94, I think that was.
Yeah, yeah. And that was when it became official. And the but then later on, we had Labor Day, but there was still the conditions for workers still, they actually were getting kind of worse, weren't they? Because, as we know, all the immigrants, we had all the wave of immigrants to come in from Europe in the early 1900s, the early part of the 20th century. We had all these workers and we had all this opportunity, but the working conditions weren't too good. And Bert, when we come back after these messages, I want you to talk to us about what was going on in the first third of the 20th century with regard to labor and how they made those changes, how they affected change, I should say. 20 after, we'll be right back with our good friend, Bert Carson. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me, and thank you for hanging around with us if you've already been here today. Bert Folsom is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Burton W. Folsom, Jr. is the name you'll find on the books that he's written, if you'll check those out wherever books are sold. In fact, The Myth of the Robber Baron is now in its third edition. At least that's the last copy I have, Bert.
Actually, we just, last month, went into a fourth edition.
Outstanding. Well, I'm looking forward to getting my new copy.
Well, I'll have to get you one.
My new autographed copy. okay, Bert, let's move the labor movement into the 20th century and talk about what was going on. The 20th century, Bert, you've heard me say this before, was the century of the major corporation. The 21st century is the century, is and will become, and is and will continue to be, the century of the entrepreneur. It's our century. But the 20th century really was the century of the major corporation. And in terms of the history of the marketplace, the 20th century was really a unique situation. It was really kind of an anomaly, wasn't it, Bert?
Well, yes. It was a transition time for labor, that's for sure.
Yep.
Most labor although it's kind of odd, isn't it? Most labor was very unorganized at the beginning of the century. The American Federation of Labor was strong at the turn of the century, and they had all these craft unions of skilled laborers, whether they're glass blowers or highly skilled people that happen to be connected with the steel industry in some way. But you had most people who were in the laboring force were not members of a union at all, the overwhelming majority. Then we went through a period where that number got up to over 30-35%, and now it's back down again to almost where it was at the beginning of the 20th.
It's about 12%, I think, now.
Yes, and that so it's gone up, and then it peaked in the 40s or so, and then it's steadily gone down, 1940s, and then it's steadily gone down in the last 60 years.
But the in terms of the 20th century, the major corporation really came to be more than, I mean, there were major corporations in the 18th, in the 19th century.
Right.
But not that many, and they certainly weren't in, you know, in the thousands like they became in the 20th century. And so those people, those companies, were able to, because of the times, because of the way things were going and the emergence of the economic power of the United States, they were able to, at first, take advantage of labor, and then later be able to afford for a long time the demands of labor, weren't they?
I think that's a good summary statement. And that's exactly true. We turn the century in 1901. We get U.S. Steel, the merger, the first billion-dollar corporation, mm-hmm. a lot of other mergers, and indeed it is the century of the large corporation. Not that the largeness necessarily meant it was the most effective.
Right, exactly. But in those days, what I've said before, Bert, is that if guys like Henry Ford wanted to leverage their dream, they had to do it with people and capital. And that's what's going to be different about the 21st century, is you and I can leverage our dream without hiring thousands and tens of thousands of people and having billions of dollars in capital. Technology helps us leverage that, whereas it wasn't so 100 years ago. And
yes.
And he needed those people who were coming here from Europe.
Yes. And
they were willing to work for almost nothing under almost any kind of conditions just to be here, weren't they?
They were, and it's important to note some of these laborers were not treated very well, that's for sure. The people who did the best, however, and Henry Ford is one you've mentioned, tended to treat the labor force, at least for a long time. There were problems in the 30s he had, but at first he treated them very well. He paid them well,
mm-hmm.
and they had good conditions. He hired, right from the start, a large number of black Americans. Mm-hmm. He always had about 10%. He hired handicapped people.
He was ahead of the curve on a lot of areas, wasn't he?
He was ahead of the curve and did well, and so those who saw that he was he had the 40-hour day,
mm-hmm.
Began to emulate him.
You mean the 40-hour week.
Excuse me.
I've been trying to get my people to work 40 hours a day, and that just won't do it.
Let's try it a 40-hour week. Right, 8-hour day, and those innovations stuck, and some people think that labor unions caused those changes, but it was really people like Henry Ford who were initiating them and showing, hey, people, you have them work 8 hours a day, give them good pay, and they will people will be in long line to work those jobs. They won't want to get fired from them, and they'll work harder for you than some of the ones that pay less and you have to work longer hours.
He believed that if you treated your people well, they'd be more productive, and ultimately it'd be a good investment for the company, didn't he?
That's what he believed, and he practiced that from the time he developed his assembly line and his his $5 day and
mm-hmm.
the 40-hour week. In the 20s, he even paid more. He made it a 6-hour day. He became a little bit confused in the 1930s and started having all sorts of labor problems. But for the first 20 years or so, he made that system work very well.
Right. There might have been a little bit of early onset Alzheimer's going on there in the 30s.
I think so. I discussed that in Empire Builders.
He was already in his 70s or 80s at that time, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. And I just think he sort of had a hardening of the arteries or something like that. He had some problem, but the point is, he showed us the way in the early part of the 1900s that if labor is well treated, they will tend to work very well for you.
Right. We're gonna move a little closer to the 21st century with our discussion of Labor Day, folks, and the relationship labor has with the rest of the marketplace with our good friend Bert Folsom. Right after these messages, it's 29 after. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
I'm reading a book her name. She's got it.
Since I began broadcasting this show in 1997, part of my contract with you has been to introduce you to only the very best people, companies, and products that I can find. IBM fits that profile 100%. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and as you know by now, IBM is my sponsor in bringing you this show and all of my other small business resources. Take it from me, IBM has done a great job of developing the kinds of products and services you and I need to grow our small businesses and that help us gain a competitive edge through technology. You can find all of IBM's small business offerings at ibm.com/business center, including a free electronic newsletter, special offers, and online advice on helping you make the right technology and e-business choices. I hope you'll say thanks to IBM for helping me help you by giving them first shot at your technology and e-commerce business. That's www.ibm.com/business center. It's a great small business website.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Mr. Gracious, Mr. Humble here. 800-531-3815. Toll free coast to coast. And that chuckle, ladies and gentlemen, belongs to our good friend Burton W. Folsom, the author of Empire Builders and The Myths of the Robber Barons.
Well, when they name you number one, I want to hear your sound then, Jim.
Well, I told you about that. They call that group the Heavy Hundred, and I was honored to be part of that. But I, on behalf of the women, Bert, I decided that it probably wasn't a good idea to call them the Heavy Hundred. The women on the list, I thought, wouldn't want to be called part of the Heavy Hundred. And so I proposed a name change. I proposed that they call that group the Radio Gods.
Ah.
What do you think? I think that sounds better than Heavy Hundred, don't you?
Well, it might be more appealing to some of the women. I don't know if some of the theologians will like it as well.
Well, they got enough to worry about. They don't. Bert, let's bring... before we go any further, I want you to tell us about Hilldale College.
Hilldale is a very independent school. It takes no federal funds. We have a student body of 1,200 people. We've been around for
1,200
about...
1,200 students?
1,200 students.
1,200?
1,200.
That's a tiny, tiny college.
Well, it's nice because I'm teaching classes of 20 and 25 students.
Wow.
They're no large, big classes. Good students, high ACT average, 27 average on the ACT, which is about the upper 10-15%.
There are two reasons why I never went to Hillsdale.
Oh, really?
Number one, I didn't know how to get there.
Well, you,
but number two,
it's close
I couldn't,
to Hammond.
Number two, they wouldn't let me. They wouldn't have let me in. I didn't have the grades.
Well, it's a good campus. Lots of new buildings. A lot going for it. It takes no federal funds. We have kind of a national recruitment, although most of the students are from Michigan. They're from all over the country. And the lack of federal funds means that we are independent and we can do a lot of things the way we want to.
And
we think they ought to be done.
When you say no federal funds, you mean absolutely. Even the GI Bill is not welcome there. You guys come up with other ways to handle that, don't you?
The college has to raise about $12 million from the get-go each year to offset every federal grant that students like a VA loan or whatever come in with.
But what does that get you?
What that gets us is that we make our own decisions and the government isn't making them for us.
Give us an example of how you don't have to deal with something that other colleges do.
Well, in a hiring policy, we will go out and hire who we think is the best person, woman, black, white, or whatever, and we have no restrictions that tell us we have to hire somebody.
The EEOC can't come to visit
and
all that?
No.
Because you're absolutely, totally, 100% private.
Private. That means we
wow.
bring in who we want to bring in, and that applies to the students as well.
Yeah.
And
so all this business with Michigan, University of Michigan, was it University of Michigan Law
yes.
School and all that? None of that can happen at Hillsdale.
Well, they didn't bring in blacks to their college until 24 years or so after Hillsdale brought blacks into Hillsdale.
Right.
Hillsdale's the one resisting. Hillsdale was invited to go to a bowl game in 1955 in Florida.
A bowl to play football in a
play
bowl
football. Oh, they beat Notre Dame back in their early years. They wouldn't go to the Tangerine Bowl in Florida because they said we could not bring our black athletes.
Wow.
And so that goes, they have always been a strong part, sometimes being valedictorian of the class. it's a fiercely independent school. Yeah, bowl games.
You know, that's a perfect place for you, Bert. I can't think of a better environment for Bert Folsom.
Well, I'm enjoying it.
I bet you are. Well, we're going to keep track of you in your new assignment there. Bert, give us the website for the college, by the way.
www.hillsdale.edu.
Okay.
Or Hillsdale College.
Well, folks, the reason I wanted to spend a little time on that, I wanted Bert to tell us a little bit about that because it's a new assignment for him. He's just left the Center for the American Idea down in Texas. We knew him there. We actually knew him before. You were actually in Michigan the first time we met 6 years ago, over six
yes,
years
with
ago.
Yes, with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy.
Right, and when you were there. And so, but the interesting thing about Hillsdale is that it's, I mean, as a small college, it's an independent school, and it reminds me of small business owners.
Yes.
Bert, we don't like to take a lot of guff off of people. we operate on an unassigned frequency. We don't want anybody else tuning into our frequency telling us what to do. And so I think we can probably, small business owners can learn a little bit from the Hillsdale College folks and see what they've foregone, some of the federal stuff that they've foregone, just so that they can be independent. And I admire that spirit, and I know you guys do too. Quick break. We'll be going to be right back with our good friend Bert Folsom, and I want to ask him about, when we come back, I want to ask him about the 21st century Labor Day. What's it going to look
I'll
like?
Be sitting Stay with in the evening calm, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on...
We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you about our show coming up straight ahead. We got Fred Siegel, who's going to talk to us about your investments, and looking forward to getting Fred on the show. Ellen Frankenberg is our family business expert. She'll be joining us. And then Peter Meyer is going to join us. And we're going to talk about creating and dominating new markets with Peter, and that's coming up all in the next show. We've got a lot of good stuff all the rest of the week, and I'm looking forward to introducing you to all those folks. Bert Folsom is our guest, and we're talking about Labor Day. Bert, the 20th century was not only the century of the big corporations, the major corporations.
Right.
It was the century of labor. But it also, as the century ended, it also seemed to be, from an organization standpoint, from an organized labor standpoint, the end of the 20th century saw the significant downsizing of organized labor. And where do you see organized labor being 20 years from now?
Probably smaller still.
Smaller than 12%, huh?
Right. I would think it might even be smaller than that, although it's hard to project decades and decades, of course, into the future, but it's
but you
obvious.
Can, you can do it, Bert. I know you can do it.
I project decades into the past. That's what historians do. But the Internet and the computer are really changing a lot. And you made the point earlier that it's possible to organize, and that is for an entrepreneur to organize resources without having all the manpower, mm-hmm. and having to have all the capital,
mm-hmm.
that used to be the case. And so, as you were saying, this could very well be the century of the entrepreneur. That will change the game entirely.
That's exactly right. Plus the fact that the goods and services are becoming more global these days. I mean, people talk about globalization, Bert, like it's some kind of a new political evil or something. And globalization has been going on for thousands of years, hasn't it been?
Well, that's always been the part of trade. If you look at the early part of the United States history, you know, when we were trading tobacco, the first real export crop out of the New World, it was to England, and England would then market the crop all the rest of the way around Europe. Then the beaver hat that was popular, that
right.
we got from the beaver in New York, was the fashion in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that sounds like globalization of a sort to me.
Absolutely, absolutely. But the thing is, a lot of the in terms of labor's future, in America, it's not just a cultural change, which I think there is a cultural change. Corporations are getting it now. They're realizing that they owe, and they have now for a long time, that they're not going to be abusing their people. Their government has stepped in with laws that prevent them, that threaten severe punishment if they abuse and harm or whatever to whatever degree they don't
right.
take care of their people. And so employees are realizing, you know what, maybe the union is not necessary. I'm actually being taken care of okay. That's one thing. The other thing is many of the jobs that unions used to represent are not here anymore.
Well, that's the other thing. It's so much as technology is so rapidly changing that, I've heard you make this point before too, that a lot of people it's hard to retrain them because they can't go easily into other types of labor forces if they're not computer literate.
Well, exactly. The best example I've got of that is I've said this before, folks, but it's worth repeating. I met a guy who was the manager of a paper plant. Now, this wasn't a pulp plant. They manufactured paper at this plant, and it was a brand new plant. It was a greenfield plant. And I asked him, how many employees you have? He said 400. And I said, how many of them are involved in, how many of them use technology? They use a computer or some kind of technology to do their job. He said 100% of my employees use technology in every in the things that they do, on the line, everywhere. And he said, but 10 years ago, this factory, it would have taken 800 people to run this factory. So there's 400 less jobs because of technology, and you know it's just the way of things.
Right, and the 400 that have to be left have to be more literate on higher technology.
And that's the reason why, Bert, I believe that even though the economy is doing better now, and it's probably going to continue to do better, and we could literally be in store for another 18-20 year expansion like the last one we had, but it's going to take longer to get our people back up to full employment in this cycle than it was in the last cycle. Don't you think so?
That may be true. It's hard to tell. I'm not convinced that we're going to have this the big rise, that we're out of the woods yet. But if indeed we are, and the economy is on more of a long-term upswing, this business of employability and versatility of the labor force is absolutely going to be important. There's no question about that.
Well, and see, this is another reason why I consider the 21st century to be the century of the entrepreneur, Bert, because when I say entrepreneur, my definition is very broad. It's a broad brush definition, because I believe that workers are going to become more entrepreneurial in the 21st century.
Okay.
See, and that's the reason why people who can't get a job are starting to look around for all kinds of possibilities in ways that they wouldn't have done 50 years ago.
Right.
And they're able to use technology for themselves and to leverage. There will be 10 years from now, Bert, you and I will read about people who were downsized in the year 2000, and 10 years later they were the captain of their own company.
Right.
And a very successful one, because they looked around and saw what the possibilities were in ways that was not happening 50 years ago. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with our good friend Bert Folsom after these messages. Stay tuned. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. And if you'd like to join the more than 10,000 people who subscribe to my free newsletter, check it out at jbsba.com. You can go ahead and subscribe there. And you can also click on a link that will take you to a sample article, an idea of what some of the stuff that I write looks like in the newsletter. So check
that
out.
I like your articles, Jim. You're a good writer.
Well, thank you, Bert. I appreciate that very much. Coming from you, that's high praise. Bert, let's talk about a day that I've been talking about now for a few years, and that I'd like for people to start thinking about. And that's a day to honor entrepreneurs, a day to honor small business owners. There's a Small Business Week every year, and Chambers of Commerce celebrate Small Business Week around the country, but it's always at different times of the year. It's the SBA has theirs typically, the National Week is typically in May. This year it's actually in September in 2 weeks. But there is no federal holiday celebrating the things, the contribution that small business owners make. And I think that's a mistake, Bert.
Well, I do too. You and I each have different sorts of ideas for solving that. I think you like the idea of a National Entrepreneur Day, which I think is good. I think we ought to co-opt Labor Day and turn it into Entrepreneur Day, simply because the number of manual laborers in this country was over 50% when the Labor Day became a holiday. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just for unions. I mean, that's ridiculous. It was for people who worked with their hands, who built this country. But that number has decreased so sharply with the change in technology that to truly capture the middle of where the laboring force is, you have to look at technology, you have to look at entrepreneurship, and it ought to be more broadly, not just manual labor or Labor Day, but Entrepreneur Day, and try to negotiate a change to changing Labor Day to Entrepreneur Day.
Well, you know, so what you're saying is and listen, I'm a reasonable guy. I'm a pragmatic guy here. You know, I'm not looking at a windmill to tilt at. And obviously, that's one of the reasons why I haven't actually taken any official action with this. But the thing is I think what you're saying is the organizing of the Labor Day activities in the areas is always done by the unions.
Yes.
And so if the unions are going to be diminishing, which I agree with you, I think they are. I think 10 years from now, they'll be down to 8%, maybe less membership. But the thing is, so what you're saying is it may be in order to keep the barbecues flowing, so to speak.
Right.
Maybe we ought to change the name to the Labor and Small Business Day.
Well, that could be a start, see, and then gradually shorten it to Entrepreneur Day.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's some merit in that. And as you say, it's already a holiday, so we're already paying for the
right.
for the day.
That won't be changed, right?
Right. And see, what I've been concerned about with having a national day was that we created another day. The small business owners had to make payroll with no production.
Exactly. That's perfectly logical on your part. I don't think we should, and that's why you were suggesting, as I recall, a Sunday.
Exactly. My idea was that we do it on Sunday, the second Sunday in August. The reason for August is because the politicians are already in town, and they could practice their sucking up on us to get ready for sucking up to labor on Labor Day, see? And,
right.
And it's on a Sunday because that way it creates the least amount of payroll.
Well, I like your idea, actually, of the transition called Labor and Small Business Day, and then the next step is shorten it to Entrepreneur Day.
Yeah, because more and more employees, Bert, are going to have to become entrepreneurial employees. It's a term that I've been talking about for a long time in my speeches. More and more organizations are going to have to become entrepreneurial organizations, Bert, where everybody takes initiative, everybody is a stakeholder. And whether they're an owner or an employee, that's the way the marketplace is moving, Bert, right now.
Right. The concept of thoughtless sort of assembly line work is not the wave of the future.
No, that's exactly right. That's the past. That's the far past, and we're moving away from that. And, Bert, all of these things are why I'm saying that the 21st century is the century of the entrepreneur.
Century of the entrepreneur and the heavy hundred.
That's exactly. No, the radio guys, Bert. We're gonna change that name to the radio
okay.
guys. Hey, Bert, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jim. It's fun, as always.
Good job having you. Good to have you here, and good job today. And we'll see you next time. Thank you for celebrating Labor Day with me 6 years in a row.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks. Bert Folsom, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. Happy Labor Day, everybody. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.